Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today, Friday, the 23rd day of September 2022. You know, all week I've been talking about at least focused heavily upon transhumanism, the merging, the bio-digital convergence, as they call it, the merging of AI, of machine and man. And that, to me, after doing a lot of research, information, not on the internet, but away from the internet, books, interviews and such, really comes down to the death of humanity. You and I, okay, we will be the victims, obviously. We will be the dead, and we will be the people that need to be gotten rid of. All right, now, We talked about a lot. I think, and you can certainly make your comments in the comments section on Rumble and Brighteon. Of course, all of the program links are at HagmanReport.com. That's where to go to find the programs in chronological order and such. So I would urge you to do that. But I want to start off with this. Kind of the end first, to show you, at least in my view, what the globalist scumbaggery leaders, as in Alex Jones's trial yesterday, his first day of testimony, the push against the globalists, and the attorneys were talking sidebar and then outside of the jury's presence about the you know, he was asked, Alex Jones was asked, what's his motivation for doing what he does? And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it's to crush the globalists. Well, essentially, why? Why isn't globalism a good thing? Especially if it's, you know the answer to that question, so I'm not going to dig any deeper into that. But let me give you some insight into what's happening today as kind of the end, the other bookend for this week. California. If California could not get any worse, this was in Breitbart. It was reported by Breitbart yesterday. I wanted to grab this, pull this. California will allow human composting after death to combat climate change. Now, I want people to think about that. Have we come to the point now where we think so little of humanity, of God's creation, that we're going to allow this and think this is okay, where people think this is all right? The tomatoes are doing, the tomatoes and potatoes are doing good. I got this Al Bundy mental image in my head, because we got grandma, fertilizing the tomatoes. I don't want to even make fun of this, because there's nothing about this that's nice or fun. But Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law allowing the practice of composting dead human beings to battle climate change. Now think about that for a second. Again, we move from the SARS-CoV-2 crisis lockdowns. We've got to control people by way of injection. Okay, that worked to some extent. But now we're going to this. We'll put grandma underneath the rhubarb, right? Okay. Now, again, you may look at this and say, well, it's just one state, one law, one stupid thing. It's just stupid. But when you read when you get into this, and I'm not talking about just reading the news story, you start getting into the mindset, the composition of the Great Reset. It's all about climate change. The Great Reset's all about controlling people through pandemics, through emergencies. Again, I discussed this, the toolkit of tyranny. I guess I did hear that from Naomi Wolf. I guess she was the author of that statement, but nonetheless, I borrowed it unceremoniously yesterday. But when you look at the toolkit of tyranny, they want to demonize patriots. They want to kill their opposition. They want to obviously take out Donald Trump, destroy him, period. As many of the larger mouthpieces speaking against the Great Reset, they are weaponizing law enforcement. They're engaging in lawfare. They're starting wars, and they're using emergencies as the framework for what? As the framework to enslave us and ultimately to kill us. And that's not an overstatement. But what are you going to do with grandma after you kill her? Well, you know, feed the roses are looking mighty fine this year. It's because grandma and grandpa, perhaps. But again, it's not funny when you look at the text of the news article, citing high CO2 emissions associated with cremation. Now, I'm not, look, folks, you can do what you want. I'm not a believer necessarily in cremation. I will respect others' wishes. You want to be cremated? Fine. All right. And I'm not too keen on autopsies. I've attended my share of autopsies. And I know what goes on, and to me, the human body is God's temple, okay? And, anyway. But to the globalists who we're fighting against, no, the human body is, yeah, it's God's creation that they've got to get rid of. So even burning corpses, dead people, it's not good enough for the climate people who are engaged in pushing this climate change legislation. Because let's not forget, as cited in the news article, and when you dig down deeper, the actual act of cremation supposedly accounts for 360,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. Okay. Oh, and by the way, that's a bad thing. Again, I'm not speaking in favor of cremation. I'm speaking against using human beings as compost material. Eric the Tech, would you promise me, as my son-in-law, that you won't plant me necessarily in underneath a rose bed in the rose garden? Would you promise that to me?
I'm going to grow apples off your body.
the sour kind, no less, right?
Your grandkids eat your grandfather.
Sour, yeah, the sour apples too. But the reason I'm pushing this is because when you read the words of people making these laws and supporting this kind of stuff, you've got California Democrat Assembly Member Christina Garcia, by the way, the author of the bill. Saying that the practice of using people as human compost is more environmentally friendly. but she flowers is, no pun intended, flowers it up a little bit by saying, you know, it's going to give people more options for their desired burial. Instead of picking a plot, you can pick the part in the backyard, right? Where it used to be illegal, by the way. It still is in most places. But I digress. And by the way, police frown upon that. When you bury a body, they really frown upon that. Just saying. Except in California. With climate change and sea level rise very real, they're very real threats to our environment. This is an alternative method of final disposition that won't contribute emissions into our atmosphere. Okay. I look forward to continuing my legacy to fight for clean air by using my reduced remains to plant a tree. Well, let me give you a head start on it. That's not a threat. That's when you're ready, you know. Do you see the ridiculous, how ridiculous this is? So this is all part of the Great Reset. So again, consider today the final day of the week. And by the way, Eric the Tech, it's Friday, as if that makes any difference because we work all the time. But it's Friday. This is, speaking of transhumanism and the Great Reset, it's one and the same. The evil people like Yuval Noah Harari, you know him as the mentor to Klaus Schwab. But I'm going to begin into some earlier people because we didn't get here overnight. No. But by the way, they do say this. The bill will make it illegal to combine human remains without permission or unless the two are related. In other words, you just can't grab somebody, you know, smack them on the head, kill them, and bury them in the backyard. This is called, I missed it. I'm sorry here. Where is this? It's NOR. Okay. Natural organic reduction. That's what NOR stands for. Natural organic reduction. You can look this up yourself. I don't know if it's scrolled down on or scrolled off of Breitbart, but you can look this up. The Catholic Church strongly opposes NOR, charging it was meant for livestock. Well, that's what this is all about. We are the livestock. Now, again, people might say, well, you're spending too much time on one topic. Well, to you, I say, think about what this means. Think about the mentality. And I mean this sincerely. Think about the mentality behind this. Do you think that little of yourself or of others, or of God's creation to do this? This is what we've been reduced to. And it's not a far cry from that to Soylent Green. And isn't that what Alex Jones has been talking about? Isn't that what Steve Quayle and Paul McGuire and others that have been on this show have been talking about? Yes. If you go back, I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. Go back to biblical times and you know, cannibalism, the sacrificing of children, both born and unborn. This is where this left, the communist left, want us to go. And again, I can hear you say things like, well, wait a second, we got war looming, we got economic crises, we got all this taking place. Yeah, we do. And you know what? It's going to be there on Monday. It'll be there tomorrow and Sunday. It'll be there again on Monday. But the undergirding of all of this by the people in charge is really the process of this reset, of this fourth industrial revolution, as Klaus Schwab likes to reference it. And again, by people unelected that have been tossed into unelected positions or otherwise approved by current members of Congress into different positions in government, or by elected officials, whether the election was fair or not, they're there and have a staff and have a lot of people agreeing with them. This is all part of the plan. Now, speaking of this, okay, again, I'm kind of tying up loose ends of this week, and I really, again, want to, I mentioned the Alex Jones trial, and not only is he a friend, but he should be the bellwether or the canary in the coal mine, at least for broadcasters, podcasters. And I know a lot of podcasters say, well, you know, he's just a blowhard and he's been wrong more than he's been right. I don't think so. It's the other way around. I know podcasters who don't like him are jealous and envious of him, but he's getting just absolutely, well, you've seen it. You've seen it on I'm sure you have, with respect to the trial. And I'm not going to comment on the trial any further than that. You want to dig into that, you can. Shamefully, Law and Crime allowed in there, and only Law and Crime allowed in there. But to move on from that, we have the in order to push the leftist agenda, in order for the communists to win. The communist leftists to win. They have to censor or cancel or deplatform all of us, or at least the influencers. They're going to go after the biggest first, and then eventually it'll be your turn, and they're coming for you. Now, sometimes you think, okay, you know what? The cavalry could be coming in certain cases. Let's go to in the show material, which, by the way, is the HagmanReport.com. In the first set of show material, let's go to page 2. This is Ted Cruz, and this is about censorship. Again, I cite Breitbart, and this will be in the program description notes at HagmanReport.com. This is exclusive. At the time, Ted Cruz caves to Democrat Amy Klobuchar on media cartel bill. Now, why is this important? Because we look for truth. And I know you look for truth every single day when you listen or watch programs like this and others. Okay. Well, what's going on here? And why haven't I heard about this? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But Ted Cruz, a dare I say this, Republican from Texas, and I quote, caved to the Democrats on legislation that would allow media organizations to create formal cartels to negotiate with big tech companies. Now, if this plan goes forward, just let me say that again, just so people get this. Cruz, Klobuchar, and really the Democrats, the left, the communist left. What they've done is they've created legislation, or caved on legislation, that would allow media organizations to create formal cartels to negotiate with big tech companies. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, okay. The article goes on to say that if Cruz goes forward with his plans to back and allow the Senate to advance the legislation, then he will become one of the biggest enablers of the establishment media and big tech giants, and it could seriously jeopardize his political future. Well, the hell with that for a moment. What are we talking about here? Well, all right. Cruz, who had previously jammed up a committee markup of this bill, and this is the bill, the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. The acronym is JCPA. Now, this happened a few weeks ago. He kind of muddied it up, jammed it up. Now, what he did was he walked back and decided to give Klobuchar what she wanted and allow the communist proposal to proceed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee to eventually be considered by the full U.S. Senate. In other words, it'll win in the Senate by the current composition of the Senate. So what is the JCPA? Well, and what's Cruz doing and Klobuchar doing? Well, if you read the article, aides on both sides, number of aides on both sides of this fight, familiar with the matter, told Breitbart News, and this happened midweek, by the way, that Cruz caved to Klobuchar and agreed to change the language he offered in an amendment to allow the bill to advance. When questioned about it on Wednesday, Cruz did not deny the characterization that he caved. Okay. Now, he's been quiet about this. And he's also said, well, others have, spokesperson for Cruz, spokespeople have said that Cruz is a fierce defender of the First Amendment and free speech, and he will always fight to prevent America from being censored or silenced. Americans from being censored or silenced. Okay. The Senate Judiciary Committee is considering this bill again for the third week in a row. The bill itself is rather pretty straightforward, that allows the expansion. And I'm trying to really, I don't want to say dumb this down, but make it simple. The expansion of censorship of, for example, mainstream corporate legacy media to be the ultimate arbiters of what is true and what can be posted on social media sites, and what is deemed fake news. That's what this is about. And if I were an investigator, I would look at why Cruz made that decision, why he caved. The bill itself, and I'll put a link to the legislation. You can read it. You could see what this does, okay, the intended legislation. But it will, in fact, muzzle or tamp down the truth on, especially with social media, at the behest of these cartels. And the use of the word cartel in this instance is not an overstatement, by big tech media with social media and other media platforms. I'm telling you right now, the First Amendment is under attack. And interestingly enough, I mentioned Alex Jones, the trial. The First Amendment there is under attack. And you know, if you watched any of that, if you saw any of that trial, the First Amendment will not be the First Amendment much longer. I'm telling you, it is that bad. Now, who is responsible, aside from Cruz and Klobuchar and the obvious, the communist left, who's responsible for this? It's the, as I mentioned earlier, it's the people that we allow into positions, unelected positions, that, for example, this week, again, what happened with the presidential records of President Trump? What about a special master? What are we hearing about this? Who makes such decisions? You've got judges, of course, that make the decisions. You've got the special master in that case. But you also have archivists, don't you? And we've seen archivists over the years. And we don't think twice about them. I mean, have you heard a podcast about archivists? I mean, that would be a boring podcast, wouldn't it? I mean, the head of the National Archives. Let's talk about the head of the... What a boring subject. But it's not boring, and especially when you tune in to Senator Hawley interviewing Colleen Shogan for the job of the head of the National Archives. Now, why is this important? Well, the National Archives is our national library. Plus, they're involved with the presidential records. Okay, that's fine. So let's take a look at who Biden, the Biden regime, because Biden, you know Biden, Mr. Potato Head, that guy, he's not picking anything except his nose, and he's not running anything except, you know, the pudding down his mouth and the diapers that he wears. So you have to know the people behind him. But let's look at who they're putting into these positions, because the who is what got us into this trouble from the beginning. And again, I want to get into that briefly. But let's look at this video clip of this. I'll call this a job applicant, Colleen Shogan. And again, why is this important? Is because multiply this by thousands or at least hundreds of such individuals that are involved in running our government. Watch this interview. I'm going to let this interview, it's about 5 minutes, and pay very close attention to the last minute or so of the interview. Listen to what Hawley says. Now, I'm not necessarily a big fan of Hawley, but he raises some interesting points here that will, in fact, at least in my view, it does kind of coalesces things. So let's go ahead and run that clip right now. Watch this.
Welcome back. So it's been this program's position that this pandemic was created. It was a plandemic.
Yeah, that
millions
was,
of people
wrong
agree
one,
with that.
All right. That would be video number, what I'm referring to is video number
qualities.
One.
Democrats.
There we go.
On the other hand, coalesce on the intellectual tail of the continuum. So is the point that Republicans are stupid and Democrats are intellectual?
Yes, thank you, Senator, for that question. Absolutely not. The point of the article is that the presidents that I featured in it have a rhetorical connection with the American people.
A rhetorical connection that you say is anti-intellectual. And you feature every two-term Republican president, going back to Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes, Senator, I think it's a piece on rhetoric, and it is really looking at how these presidents have been successful rhetorically in their arguments.
Interesting. It's a piece on rhetoric, but you attribute part of the anti-intellectualism of the Republican Party to, in your words, the rise of the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. Is it because those voters are stupid?
Thank you, Senator, for that question. Absolutely not. And if I am confirmed as Archivist of the United States, I look forward to welcoming all Americans to the National Archives.
So do you think that people who voted for Donald Trump are anti-intellectual?
Thank you, Senator. I would not make any judgment on the people who voted for President Trump or any other president.
So you don't think the people who voted for Dwight Eisenhower or Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush, they weren't anti-intellectual? The anti-intellectual rhetoric just appealed to them because what? What's your theory?
Thank you, Senator, for that question. As I said, presidents are able to speak in common sense, plain terms to Americans that they understand.
So you characterize President Reagan as having, quote, less than impressive intellectual capacities. You said President Eisenhower and Bush were decidedly intellectual. You said Reagan engaged in intellectual posturing. Let's just start with the first one, less than impressive intellectual capacities. So in other words, it's dumb.
Thank you, Senator. Absolutely not. That was a perception, and it was cited.
I'm sorry. It's a perception by whom? By you? You wrote about it.
No, Senator. That was, and as I said, in the article, that is a perception. But actually, in the article, because...
You say Reagan's less than impressive intellectual capacities have been widely discussed. Mm-hmm. That's presented as a factual statement. Mm-hmm. You don't even cite for it. Mm-hmm. This is on page 298. I have your article. Don't dissemble in front of me. Mm-hmm. So Reagan's less than impressive intellectual capacities have been widely discussed. Mm-hmm. You're not saying that he had less than, that's not your view?
Thank you, Senator. It is not my view.
Why did you write it?
Thank you, Senator. That is not my view. My view was focused on his rhetorical capability.
That's not what your sentence says. Listen, you wrote an article saying basically that Republican voters are stupid, that Republican presidents deliberately appeal to anti-intellectualism. You category, you roll it all up in this thing called Republican populism, yet you're trying to present yourself here as a nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're an extreme partisan, and your record shows that. You're someone who has denigrated Republican presidents, every two-term Republican president, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, that has, since the Second World War, and their voters, in this lengthy article. I mean, I just don't understand. If you wrote it, why won't you stand behind it?
Thank you, Senator. I will stand by my long experience over 15 years of nonpartisan service.
You know, this is not just a theoretical set of questions, because as you know, we have seen what happens when you have political activists in the position that you are up for confirmation for. And we are living through that as a nation right now. We are living through the weaponization, the political weaponization of the National Archives, the political weaponization of the Department of Justice, the political weaponization of the FBI, such that half of the people of this country cannot trust those institutions. We're living with a president who calls half the voters of this country semi-fascists, who have said that they are a threat to democracy. This is an elected American president who makes these outrageous, outrageous statements. So in that environment, frankly, to have you up for confirmation for this position, which has become very politically charged in a way I lament it should not have been, but unfortunately, the past archivists have done what they've done. The FBI has done what it has done. DOJ has done what they have done. And here you are talking about the anti-intellectualism and, frankly, stupidity of American voters. I mean, if that isn't playing to type, I don't know what the world is. I mean, it's basically a self-parody. How can you assure me or anybody watching this hearing, the millions of Americans, 75 million Americans who voted for Republican in the last election, how can you assure them that you will be truly nonpartisan, given what you have said over a period of years?
Yes. Thank you, Senator. I stand by my record of nonpartisan service at the Congressional Research Service, the Library of Congress, and at the White House Historical Association. And I invite anybody to talk to the people that I have worked with for years in my nonpartisan government service.
Mr. Chairman, without objection, I'd like to enter this article, Anti-Intellectualism and the Modern Presidency, Republican Populism. I'd like to enter it into the record.
Without objection.
I'd invite everybody to read this. You can read the words for yourselves. You can read the entire article for yourselves, and folks can make.
All right. The reason I wanted to play that is because what you witnessed there is what transpires over and over and over again and has transpired for years upon decades for people in positions that will impact changes into everyday things that happen. For example, in her case, by the way, thank you, Senator. Help me with this. All right. Why? Why is that necessary? This is a Q&A session. This is an interview. This is, I digress. it's just annoying as hell. Okay. But think about the words that were in there. Populist. Yes, sure. Republican, Democrat. We all know it's a uniparty, but populist. Christians. And then moving on to the supporters of President Trump, meaning in her world, domestic extremists. So you wonder why we are in trouble where we're at now. This is part of the reason why. Now, a little bit about Shogun, Colleen Joy Shogun, who happened to be birthed in Pittsburgh. Wow. Okay. She joined the Association of, let me see here. I'm sorry. She's the senior vice president and director of the David Rubenstein Center. Joined it back in the winter of 2020 after 15 years of federal government service. We can stop right there, put a period right there of after 15 years of federal government service. What was that? Well, she previously worked in the United States Senate and as a senior executive at the Library of Congress. She was also, I should say, the vice chair of the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission and now serves as the chair of the board of directors at the Women's Suffrage National Monument Foundation. Okay, that stuff is, okay, that's not necessarily important. But what is important, 15 years of government service, Library of Congress. What do you think about this? Now, as head archivist, as head of the National Archival Records in NARA, the Records Act, what do you think someone like this would do when it comes to President Trump's records, the subject of the raid at Mar-a-Lago? Meanwhile, hold on a second here because I have to go back to my notes on my electronic notes here. Isn't it a little bit odd, and I'm going to put this up here, isn't it a little bit odd that Obama has records in storage at a warehouse in Chicago? And this warehouse is actually warehoused old or furniture, it's a furniture warehouse, some millions of records, and has not complied with the Presidential Records Act via NARA. Yet President Trump, the same thing, he gets raided at Mar-a-Lago. Again, pointing out the hypocrisy. So you add to the mix this Colleen Shogun and others in those positions, and what do you get? You get the mess we're in. So when you ask who's responsible for all of this garbage, I suppose the bottom line, it's us, because we elect the people in most cases, or at least that's the way it used to be. Anymore, I'm not so sure. I think it's I think the voting process is just an act unless we all get involved and overwhelmingly show them that we're not going to take it anymore. But it's those people that we've chosen. For example, and let me toss this out there very, very, again, to me, this is critical to know history. Remember, and how many people remember this? I remember the Carter days. Remember Carter Ford, that whole election? Eric Tech, I'm sure, remembers Carter being elected. Yeah, no. He wasn't even born yet. But remember, people wanted something different. This is right after Watergate back in 76. People still had the stench in their minds of Watergate on them. So, hey, let's elect Jimmy Carter, a peanut farmer from Georgia, a simple guy. Look what happened when that happened. But what did Carter do? And this is so important to understand because it parallels, at least in my mind, and I want you to think about this. It parallels mistakes I think President Trump made when after he was elected. One of the first things that Carter did in 1976 was pick his advisors. So who did he pick? Where did he pick his advisors from? He selected his advisors, a number of them. In fact, if I recall correctly, all but one, maybe two, from a group called the Trilateral Commission. And the Trilateral Commission was founded in 1973 by David Rockefeller and Mika Brzezinski, her father, Zbigniew Brzezinski. You know, Mika on Morning Joe, along with Joe dead intern in my office, Scarborough. Her father, current MSNBC host, just to be clear. And Patrick Wood had talked about this and has written about this. The peanut farmer from Georgia. I'm looking at my notes here and quote exactly what Patrick Wood wrote here. President James Earl Carter, the Georgia peanut farmer turned politician who promised, "I will never lie to you," was chosen to join the commission. We're talking about the Trilateral Commission by Zbigniew Brzezinski back in 1973. It was Brzezinski, in fact, who first identified Carter as presidential timber, his word, and subsequently educated him in economics and foreign policy and the ins and outs of world politics. Upon Carter's election, his first appointment placed Brzezinski as assistant to the president for national security matters. You got that? Most commonly, and again, pardon the rattling of the papers here, appointed him as the head of the National Security Council because he only answered to the president. Some rightly said Brzezinski held the second most powerful position in the U.S. Okay. Now, it didn't happen, even at that time, it didn't happen without decades of previous fertilization of the political landscape. I know this might sound boring, but you've got to understand it's not. I really believe it's not. Because it helps us understand both 2016 to 2017 through 2020, 2021, and today. The roots of the globalist movement that we're seeing today you have to go back to the 1800s, really. The modern sociology movement, and remember, culture is downstream of politics, okay? Remember that statement. But the sociological movement has a lot to do with what we're seeing today. The intellectual fermentation of the day, people like Auguste Comte, who lived back in the late 1700s or the mid 1800s. French philosopher he was. He was credited with being the father of modern sociology and considered to be the first philosopher of science. Now, again, what does this have to do with anything today? When you understand where these people come from, you'll understand. For those who come to identify, I'll say, as progressives, you hear that word, progressives, namely, those who think, believe, whose ideology, whose bias is that human society is evolving toward perfection. Those who are pushing for small g godhood, immortality, the emergence, the biological convergence of man and in machine and computer. Technocracy, as Patrick Wood had stated, well, this is where it really all began. And I mentioned Jimmy Carter because when you look at where he came from and how he came to be, you have to go back even further into the First World War and the Second World War. And I know that, again, I don't want to get too deep into history, but how this evolution has been deliberately foisted upon the American, upon the West, but specifically the American people. Now, I'm going to stop there with this history lesson, and you're probably saying, well, thank goodness, because that didn't, I don't care about that. Well, look into the history behind this, behind what I'm talking about. In fact, Alex Jones' book, The Great Reset, that's a great book to read. Glenn Beck has a book about The Great Reset, another great book to read. You'll have a better understanding of how we got here, who's responsible, and really what will happen next. Humans are obsolete. Remember, I played a clip from The Obsolete Man, The Twilight Zone. Remember that? That's where we're headed. That was programming, obviously. Predictive programming, I might add. All right, let me get back on track. Because again, a lot of things are taking place right now. Go to page 3 of the first set of notes. This is important because, again, it brings us to now the globalists have formed, here in the United States, we have infiltrated, or infiltrators, I should say, into our government, who are being groomed, financed by communists, and who are communists themselves. And we now have gotten to the point where there is this integration with communism by people in politics. Case in point, this exclusive report, necessary to read. It was published on Thursday. This is by Natalie Winters. And this appears in the National Pulse. And again, this, to me, this has all of the connections, all that you need to know about how we got here, who's involved, and the intertwined connections of this globalist movement. The article from the National Pulse reads, and for those listening by radio, Spreaker and other platforms, audio platforms, I will read and cite from the article. Stacey Adams is on the board of a group collaborating with the Communist Chinese Party. Okay, or Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams serves on the board of the Center for American Progress. Now, that is a George Soros organization, which has participated in exchanges with the premier Chinese Communist Party-linked propaganda organization for over a decade. Even co-authoring reports with a group, with the Communist Chinese Party. Well, with by way of the Center for American Progress. Now, again, from the article here, among its Democrats board members, or the Communist Party, because they're Democratic Socialist or Communist, they can no longer be called, at least in my view, Democrats. Abrams, who remarked that she was honored to be joining the board for the Center for American Progress, as it has been at the forefront of progressive policy development and activism for years, What's more, the left-wing activist spoke at the group's 2019 conference to outline solutions to combat voter suppression efforts. In other words, she was in part responsible for the changes made in the 2016 general election that were illegal by states. Now, I'm not going to read the entire article. You can do that. And remember legislation, including and especially H.R. 1. This vast reformation of voting, how we vote, voting reforms, advocacy that centers communities of color and the disadvantage to bring new voices to the table of change. In other words, diversity. Okay. The important part here is Abrams is part of the Center for American Progress. CAP has reportedly partnered with the China-United States Exchange Foundation on sponsored trips to China. Think about this. What more can we do for our own destruction than to allow this to take place? And if you think this has been, if you think this is new, this has been going on since 2009. They've been sending delegations to China as part of this program. Brochures from the Chinese government-linked organization reveal CAP delegations have discussed a wide range of issues, including geopolitical cooperation, military-to-military collaboration, climate change, energy security, trade balance, and the global financial crisis. So let me just very quickly take you back to Zbigniew Brzezinski, 1973, opening the trade doors and opening the doors to China. Currently, Belt and Road Initiative. You know what China is doing? China pretty much controls, owns, or otherwise has control over 75% of the world's population by way of Belt and Road, the Belt and Road Initiative over Africa, the ownership there, ownership of property here in the United States, but primarily over in China, and then down through Africa, through the Belt and Road and other initiatives. This is what Stacey Abrams is allied with. Okay, so I wanted to kind of bring this together to show you that, and believe me, you've got people like Mika Brzezinski on MSNBC, on Morning Joe, talking about various things, supposedly an independent journalist, right? But not given the fact that her father was in this position, co-creator, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, responsible for opening up everything into China. And here we are today. So you want to know who's responsible? And Jimmy Carter was a part of this. Yet the left, well, not yet. I mean, obviously the left believes he's the best president ever. Jimmy Carter. Today he's building houses, Habitat for Humanity. I'm not. He can build whatever he wants to build today. Okay. I'm just saying this is where it all started, but it goes back even further than that. All right. A couple more things here before I run out of time. Again, I think this is extremely important to understand. And I think that once you do understand that we're not going to get out of where we're at easily because we didn't get here overnight. Just a few things, other things here. The House. And how do I even explain this to you? The House just made an unconstitutional change for how elections are counted to protect us from another January 6th. This is from, again, from yesterday, but extremely important, okay? Think about this. The Electoral Count Act from the 1800s, which determines, it regulates how states and lawmakers certify elections, electors, I should say, and presidential winners alongside the Constitution, has just been repealed by the House. This from yesterday. Now, according to PBS, the bill was drafted in response to the events of January 6th and passed as a result. Through this, it's unconstitutional for them to do this. And this is a big deal. But again, what do you expect from people who have been selected and placed in power for eons? Nancy Pelosi, for one. But 10 Republicans even signed the legislation. This is going to move to the Senate. It's going to make problems much worse. Folks, when you take things like this, we're done, in my view, as a nation, at least as a constitutional republic. It's over. I want to bring one more thing. I had to tell you about that. Let me grab this. This is one thing I wanted to show you earlier this week. If you go to additional, which would be the second page with the video at the end, this is from Natural News. Mike Adams published this, my goodness, September 19th. What is today? The 23rd. So 4 days ago. What is the national stockpile and how might it be used to carry out harmful mass experiments on the population? Folks, I would urge you to read this article as well. In 1999, Congress allocated some $50 million in taxpayer funds to create the Strategic National Stockpile, SNS. Now, this is not what you think. This is not what you think. This little-known alphabet agency works alongside the federal government to prepare for bioterrorist attacks, natural disasters, plagues, and pandemics. Today has a budget of $500 million. While FEMA stockpiles, for example, food, water, and other things, the SNS stockpiles medical supplies, drugs, and vaccines in a secret warehouse just outside of D.C. Today, the agency has an inventory that is valued at over $7 billion and has private locations across the country. We've heard this before in other matters, okay? I would urge you to read this report. When you start understanding what the people in power are doing and how this SNS could serve as a conduit to conduct mass medical experiments on the population, then you'll understand pretty much what I believe is ahead for us. There is a video at the end of this article. I don't have time to play it. This has, it's titled Warning Global Pandemic Centers Incoming. Blueprint for Endless Pandemics released by an executive order furthers transhumanism. I mentioned that at the beginning of the week. Executive Order 14081. This is all tied together, and this is our future. From burying grandma and burying grandpa and burying your husband or wife under the roses, or in Eric's case, me under the apple tree, creates our apples, to the future pandemics This is what we're talking about and everything in between. Who's responsible, the Great Reset, and who's involved in that, and how we came to this point. It's all there. Folks, I hope you I hope that made sense to you. And I do hope you have a great weekend. May God bless. See you in the next one.